Listening
to tell me something.
To tell me something
weird. Morning edition.
Yeah,
it's this morning show. Wow.
We're coming in at the fives and the nines with the weather and the traffic.
It's 10:23 at 45 degrees.
Make sure if you're coming in on Claremont, there's a big accident out there. You might want to try to find a reroute. We got the chopper in the air.
What's it look like from up there? Oh, it's a pressure cooker.
This is a weekly podcast in which I, Eric X. Johnson, tells a story about, we'll keep it real broad. I like my, I want to be careful with my words here. I don't like this story, but this is one, it's about capital punishment, and it is sort of ripped from the headlines. You know, this is one that I read an article and just started peeling back the layers, and it was like, wow, what the fuck? To my co-host,
Jody Arnold, who's going to tell you about a Bavarian serial killer.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's like the Hinterkaifeck murders.
Our stories both have, I'm not going to give it away, but our stories both have a Bavarian connection of sorts.
Really?
Yeah, and you'll see what I'm talking about a little later on. But
hey, can we do something behind the curtain real quick?
Yeah.
I have to tell you it right now. There's a book sale today at the public library.
Right. Okay. Well,
oh, this way.
Yeah.
I'm pointing this way. There's a book sale down there. anyway.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm. I know. I think I know a guy who's going to that.
Yeah.
Now.
I'm here to help. Yeah, we're doing an early morning version.
Yeah, this is kind of weird. I kind of like it.
This is weird.
The lighting's all different.
I've got my running clothes on.
I'm dressed exactly the same as I always am.
Mm-hmm. One of your five shirts.
I've got my Neil Stryker and the Tyrant of Time shirt on.
Nice.
Supporting the artistic projects of former and hopefully future guest of the show, Brenna Smith.
Newly married.
Is that for real? I don't know if that's for real or not.
For real, you think?
I don't know. Maybe.
She's got tons of pictures.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, have you seen her wedding pictures?
No. So, I'm just going off some comments that she made, and I was kind of like, huh, I wonder what the deal is here.
Well, okay. I could see it being pretend.
Yeah, hard to say.
Kitty was loving me, and now Kitty just wants to bite.
Yeah. He goes in phases like that.
It's like a woman. Yeah, so Tyler's in Vegas. How come every other week when I do this show, I am alone because my true love is off on some other fucking adventure? You know what I thought to myself last night? And I do not say this to make him feel guilty because he's a listener of the show. But you know what I realized? How wonderful it would be sometimes to be the person in a relationship where the other person has the kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. Where you can just like
peace out,
dip out.
Yeah. And you know, you can just be like, well, I got this thing and you know, and so I'm going to go and do that. And you know, I'll miss you guys, but I'm out of here. Like, I don't get to do that. You know, I never get to be like, I mean, I've got this True North thing coming up in a few weeks, which you should all buy tickets for, volume1.org/True North. And please buy tickets to it so it's not a crapshoot. And you don't need to know what it is. Just get tickets for it. Look at the kitty is right at the microphone. But anyway, I had to do a major amount of hustling because that was my kid weekend.
Right.
I had to do a major amount of plate spinning that week since I have rehearsals for like 9 days in a row. And all of that is really hard to do with kids. And the, you know, being on my own with them half the time. Let's just say when I was married, I used to think I was a single parent. But then when I became a single parent half the time, it's like on The League. Do you remember on the very first season of The League where what's his name is like thinking about getting a divorce? He's like, well, right now I only have to do like 20% of the work 100% of the time because he's a wife.
Right.
But if I get divorced, I'm going to have to do 100% of the work 50% of the time.
Right. Yeah. So really the math doesn't really check out on that.
So it's like, boy, I really feel that.
So just, you know, like, consider that if you're in a bad marriage and you got kids, it's always good to do, you know, before any major decision, do a cost-benefit analysis.
Yeah, so he's in Vegas, like, you know, you've been there. He's going today and leaving on Tuesday.
Okay.
He'll be back Tuesday. Is that like, what do you do in Vegas for that long, for real?
To me, that's like the perfect time or the perfect amount of time to be in Vegas. You know, it's not, it's long enough that you can do whatever it is you want to do. But like not so long that you're just like, wow, I understand what this place is and I no longer want to be a part of it.
Yeah. But what is it that you do? Well, like for real?
No. Okay. What I'll say about Vegas, I mean, number one is the entire place is like, you need to go in like understanding that the entire place is just designed to, capitalize on human desires,
mm-hmm.
and to extract money,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so, and I think most people understand that on a kind of a basic academic level. You can do just about anything out there, you
mm-hmm.
know? So it's, you know, people think of it as like, you know, gambling and drinking and drugs, but like they're really, and those are all there, you know, for the taking, but
his friend that he's going with is going to really want to do the drinking a lot.
Sure. Yeah. And you can have an open container anywhere in the city of Las Vegas, which is, you know, kind of cool when you're out there, you know, just like in some warm desert air and you're just bumming around. Like, you know, it's kind of nice to just be able to walk around with a cold beverage wherever
yeah.
you want. I mean, of course that's taken to excess, which is also what Vegas is all about. Some people like to really take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
But there really is like, there is something, if you're like, oh, I don't think I'm into the Vegas thing and you've never been there. What I would say is like, there is something for you there, 100%, because like they know that, you know, like they figured it out that not everybody wants to go to Vegas. And so they're trying to, or not everybody's into the gambling, not everybody's into the drinking. So they figured things out for you to do to get your money too.
So it's like the most clever marketing.
Yeah, kind of, you know, I mean, I wouldn't even say it's really clever. It's really kind of
base.
Audacious, maybe,
yeah.
You know, like, but it is also very fun. You know, so if you go in there with the idea that you're okay with parting with some of your money, it is a very fun place to be. And if you know what you're doing, and there's a lot of resources online that can kind of point you in the right direction, but you don't have to spend very much money to have fun out there.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you can if that's your thing. But there's a lot of really good food to be had for not a lot of money. I think one thing that is kind of cool is the Container Mall, which is a shopping mall that is built out of old shipping containers. Well, it's not really a mall, but it's like a, you know,
oh,
there's multiple
God.
Stores, and which is
like those stacky ones.
Yeah.
That, oh, that's
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Like multiple levels and stuff. Like it's really cool.
I hope they make sell magnets of that attraction.
Maybe. I don't know.
I told them, like, just I'd like a magnet. And I had some guilt about sending him there. I felt bad. Like, is it the sort of place I should feel guilty sending somebody to Vegas who is not unattached?
No.
Do you know what I mean by that? It's like, am I cramping his experience by just my very existence?
No.
I felt like, because I really have no reservations about him going alone. It's like the first person I've dated in a while where I don't have reservations. Because, you know, you tell some people your boyfriend's going to Vegas with a bunch of...
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Mm.
No, I don't think it's not my... It has not been my experience that you become a fundamentally different person when you enter the city limits.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, if you're the kind of person who is prone to indiscretion, that's who you're going to be in Vegas, but that's also who you are here.
Yeah.
But,
and if you have a lot of social anxiety... It's probably going to be the same.
Yeah. you know, and I think that can go kind of both ways out there, you know, because like I feel I'm not a big crowd person, but I do like the Vegas crowd because there's plenty of space, you know, like you're never, there's a lot of people, but like, it's so open that, you know, you're never really like shoulder to shoulder bumping into people.
I would hate that.
And there's a really
shouldered.
Yeah. I never really felt like I never feel like my personal space is really being violated, you know, like just walking around, like, you know, even when it's like crazy busy.
Do you love it so much that you'd go again?
Yeah, I'd totally go again. You know, I think there are other interesting places that I'd like to see, you know, but if somebody were planning a trip and said like, yeah, let's go to Vegas. Yeah, I'm totally in.
Have you gone to any shows?
I've gone to a couple of shows.
Did you go to the Cirque du Soleil there?
No, haven't done that, but I hear it's good.
Yeah.
I did see Britney Spears.
You did not?
Yeah.
I did not know this.
Yeah, she was doing, I don't know if she's still doing, but she was doing a residency at, is it Paris or Universal or I forget what it was.
Was it worth going to?
It was a good show.
Oh my God, that so fucks with my reality right now at this time of morning. Like that does not match. Is this when you went alone?
I'm trying to remember what I was out there for. I don't remember. Honestly.
I mean, you were out there alone once.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. What?
Nothing.
Oh.
I just... And I'm just aware you were out there alone once.
I would... If I were road tripping or something, like, I would go there alone again. I don't know if I would, like, vacation alone there again.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Would Sandy think that was... I mean, you're...
Well, I think it would be weird now if I vacationed alone, you know, just in general.
Yeah.
Like, just like, hey, Sandy, peace.
I got to go. Yeah. The road's calling me.
Yeah. You know, the giant, expansive asphalt ribbon is calling my name and I must obey. So... I enjoy it. It's a good time. And if you don't think you would like it, you're not looking in the right places.
Well, and you know, Baz Luhrmann, did you ever see his version of Romeo and Juliet or Moulin Rouge? Did you ever see any of those? The real kind of anachronistic, you know, old and new mixed together with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, okay, that's the one. Okay, I didn't recognize the name that you dropped on me there, but...
Yeah, he was the creator behind all that. He had a really cool Vegas show where they smashed together, like, three of his performances into one, like, weird musical adventure.
Is it because he's got too many hits and he can't play them all, so...
They do a medley.
So they do a medley of his shows, and... and then he like performs a bunch of other people's shows.
Yeah. Oh my God. Just what scrolled across my Facebook feed yesterday was Diamond Rio adding a second show to somewhere in Minnesota. And I thought, why would they need to do that?
Come on, man. People are such disappointments.
I know.
Whoever sold out that first show, every person who bought a ticket that sold out that show and demanded, you know, like creating the demand for a second show, mm-hmm. you're all a massive disappointment to me.
I've discovered the key to petting kitties to have my hand inside a sweatshirt.
Yeah. Yeah. You said like a leather glove. Or like a chainmail glove. No, he could probably bite through that. Get
because
through the
like, yeah. What's.
He gets a little nippy.
You can't check out when you're petting kitty.
No. He knows. He's got like a detector.
Yeah. So now I just realize I can't just pet and be doing something else. I just have to be really.
Yeah, you have to, right.
Yeah. You got anything else going on?
Well, I wanted to ask you, actually, because, you know, you've got the thing at the Pablo Center, the
yeah.
True North Stories Elite. The True North Elite Story.
I got to look up what it
is. Story time in the True North.
Real Wisconsin stories unfolding live on stage featuring former guest of the show, The Butler. He's also performing on this very same stage as I am.
And which stage is that going to be at the
it is
Pablo
going to,
Center?
Yes, the, that okay, that is going to be at the... where is it going to be? Because I thought it was the RCU Theater.
That's the big one.
Yeah, there's 400 seats, so it must be that one.
No, that the 400 seat is the that's the Jamf Theater. That's
oh, okay.
The smaller one.
Oh,
that's the RCU. I think is a 1200 seat.
Oh yeah, this is only 400 seats, but yeah.
So you're like in the minor league. It's like AAA though.
And Sandy heard me doing. I get it. That's a baseball thing.
Yeah.
I love baseball.
Yeah.
But yeah, this thing's happening on the 16th and 17th, and apparently Sandy heard my interview.
Yeah.
She listens to public radio.
Totally, yeah.
I mean, I didn't know when it was dropping or any part of it. Did she?
And then you said the dude asked you afterward, like, oh, should I know who you are? Are you a person that...
Yeah, that's what he said to me. Uh-huh. And I was like, yeah.
It's like, I know one of us is the radio professional.
I mean, simply... Just
irresistible. No, sorry.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So, and yes, so that happens. And yes, the Butler is going to be on there. The Butler, who has a book review in the New York Times this week for somebody else's book. He just shared a link. I mean, so Butler in the Wild's all over the place. The Leif Anger's new novel brims with grace and quirky charm. So this guy's got a new book out, and the Butler wrote a review, and I don't know what the book's called. It might be called Virgil Wander, but I'm not for sure. So that old Butler in the Wild, he's out there, out and about in the world.
Still haven't seen him.
No, I haven't either, but I know he's going to be around pretty soon. I'll have lots of updates when I start doing my rehearsals.
I was up in a tree with a pair of binoculars, and, you know, I was scoping out the area, and some lady called the cops. So that didn't work very well. Apparently that's a thing that people do that...
Was it his wife?
I don't think so.
Did she say her name was Regina?
Well, we didn't have time for introductions, you know. I'll go back up there and I'll wave and yell.
Yeah. You know? Well, he was just on vacation.
But I don't want to yell because I don't want to scare him away.
I know because
it is like you got to approach the Butler, you know, with a little stealth because he's a little skittish, as I'm told.
And hey, guess what? Whitey Bulger, do you know him?
Yeah, the crime family guy.
He just got killed in prison.
That's what I heard.
Yeah. So.
You know, it's interesting. There's a lot of ties happening to my story, you know. There's something from the New York Times in my story. It has to do with prison.
So, should we get to it?
Yeah, maybe we should. Why don't you start? We'll make people we'll hang on the edge of their seats. And you can tell me something weird.
I would love to. And guess what? I've been a real fan. I'm taking a page from your playbook and rewinding time a bit. Of course, I don't go back as far as you do.
1837.
Is that what yours can't be that old because you're talking prison and New York Times.
Yeah, definitely didn't have prison in 1837. So a lot of people don't know that. They just took care of business. They have time for prison. Who's got those kind of resources? They didn't even know how to make food back then. How to grow it.
They were so dumb.
Oh, a bunch of idiots.
You are really dumb.
Yeah, if you're from 1837, you're a moron. And I don't feel bad saying that at all. I'll stand by it. Idiots.
So... And then you're just put your hand in your pocket and looking around like who's going to argue with this? Hey, okay, I'll get going. Look, there's that guy.
Hey, look it, there's that guy.
All right, I am going to tell you.
As my neighbor just walks past. The window.
Well, I see him a lot.
Yeah.
He.
I'm told, actually, Dave Racine, who came to my movie night.
Yeah.
Tells me that our neighbors do a podcast.
There's somebody else living here.
This building, there are two podcasts that are done out of this building, apparently.
What's the name of it?
It's called Married with Comics. I haven't had a chance to check it out yet, but
Married
I think
with
we should,
comics.
Yeah, I think we should. I definitely think we should. There should be like a crossover episode.
I mean, are you kidding me?
Yeah, like
let's first check it out.
Right? Yeah, we don't. I mean, we got to be careful about what we tie our brand to.
I mean, I'm dating a podcaster, and we have yet to do a crossover.
That's true enough. Weren't you on that show once, though?
Yeah, was on his. Yeah.
Did you even remember to mention Tell Me Something Weird on that show?
Yes, I did.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
So I noticed you didn't do it on WPR, but, you know, whatever.
You didn't even listen. That was a snap, right?
Yeah.
Did you even get to listen to the whole thing?
No.
Right. Okay.
But you were on the radio. I
was.
That.
I mean... Just the life of a...
Which we probably reach more listeners on the podcast than that interview reached.
I completely thought about that. Yeah. Seeing as how when I asked, when's the thing airing? Oh, it already did. Oh, okay. I guess I won't promote that.
Yep.
Okay. Well, let me tell you about the Hinterkaifeck family. Hinterkaifeck.
Is that hyphenated?
No. It's one Hinter...
Whoa.
Hinterkaifeck, Hinterkaifeck. Yeah.
All right.
So in the early 1920s, on a Friday night in late March, a German family and their new maid, they just got a new one, were brutally killed in their rural and isolated home.
It's a waste of a perfectly good brand new maid.
Because you know what sucks is because she was killed, she couldn't clean it up.
That's a real...
That's a real life conundrum.
Like
It's like, if she were around, yeah, they could have checked out. And like, what are they going to do for an investigation? In 1920, what's going to happen? What are they going to do? Well, we'll find out, right? All right, so there were six people.
I mean, we were talking about 1837s being dumb. 1920s in Germany?
Oh, my God. Things are about to get real dumb there. Like, this is just on the precipice of dumbness. So there were six people in the family, and it's like... one of the oldest, bloodiest, unsolved murders of an entire family, okay? So, how this occurred, it was March 31st. It was 1922. The names of the people, oh boy, okay. Andreas and Cazelia Gruber, their daughter Victoria, Victoria's children, Joseph and Cazelia. Like, wow, real creative. They have to cook. And the family's housekeeper, Maria Baumgartner. Mm. All right. They were living on a farmstead called Hinterkaifeck. So that's where Hinterkaifeck comes in, which sounds like the name of some Nazi plan, doesn't it? The Hinterkaifeck scandal. The Hindenburg Kaifecker.
There's a this brewery in Green Bay called Hinterland.
Yeah, there is. There's a...
Hinter in German, I think, means...
Come hither?
Yeah. It's the Come Hither Land beer.
What do you think it means? What do you think it means? Like, there's not a real answer to it. Let's talk about what we think it means.
What does Hinter mean to you? I think it means, like, far away or, like... backwoods.
Okay.
You know, like hinterland would be like in the middle of nowhere. Hinterland is German for bumfuck Egypt.
So then Hinterkaifeck is bumfuck farm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because this
BFF.
BFF. All right. So it's that place is now in Bavaria, Germany. And so these people are killed. And the maid was murdered in her room. The kid, Joseph, was 2, was killed in a crib in his mother's room. All right. So the rest of the family was all murdered in the barn. And we're talking like this was sleepy time. This was not a wakey time.
Yeah, that's how I've always referred to it. It's like right now it's wakey time.
Come on, you say walkies.
Yeah, to my dog.
But he's a person.
Well, I mean, he's not quite a person, but not like a, you know, he's better than like a dog.
He's not just a regular dog.
He's definitely not just a regular dog.
I like how this cat's like, I left for a minute, but...
Eh.
This place is so desolate and boring these days that I have to come back.
Yeah, I got nothing else to do. So yeah, how are you guys?
Yeah. All right, so the other 4 people are found in the barn. And
I want to know where it started. Did it start in the house? No, I can't. I got to figure whatever it is started in the barn and then, you know, like... And then the person went and was just like, well, I need to finish the job. I mean, if you're going to start something, you got to finish it.
Well, yeah, but if you took, I mean, there was another child murdered. So why would you leave the one in the crib? Because they couldn't walk?
I don't know. Can kids walk
2? Yeah, they can walk. Can kids
They can trundle, right?
And then the maid,
they can
like.
Stumble around like a tiny little drunk person.
So I don't know what makes more sense, but here's what investigators at the time, you know, we know they're complete morons, so
right. Yeah, they didn't have I don't know how they solved anything.
Right, I don't either. So
they didn't have security cameras, they didn't have DNA testing. You know, then right. Those are the only ways you can solve crimes.
I hate it when you're funny. So, all right. What investigators figure is that they lured these people to the barn 1 at a time and systematically attacked them with a mattock, which is a hand tool used in farming.
It would be a real gruesome way to go.
With a long handle and a wide head with a chisel on one hand. End and a blade on the other. So that's what they were thinking. After
I actually have a mattock in my garage.
You do?
Yeah, and I use for you use it for like digging in the ground.
Yeah, and then killing.
Well, I mean, it's a multi-purpose kind of tool. It's a multi-tool.
So after these people are all murdered, the killer stacks the corpses on top of each other and covers them with hay. Okay. So the young girl that was out there, Kazelia, however you pronounce that, the young Kazelia had clumps of hair in her hands and bald patches all over her head, causing them to conclude she had ripped out her own hair. They theorized that she probably didn't die right away, and she did this as a result of being like terrified and dying next in a stack of corpses.
Well, who doesn't want to go like that?
She was 7 years old at the time of this happening. So then they figure, all right, so your theory is probably true, because then they figure that they went inside the house and murdered the housekeeper and the two-year-old. But wait until you listen to this. Instead of fleeing the grisly scene, I got this one from my neighbor, Pam.
Hey, Pam.
Instead of leaving, based on testimony from neighbors and evidence found inside the home, they think that these killers stayed in the house for days after the fact. So the killings went undetected for 4 days until April 4th. And this was largely because in the days after the murders, the neighbors saw smoke coming from the chimney.
So, So this is an April Fool's killing?
Well, right before.
Do you think they were just, the killers were waiting around to see if, like, they got it?
I feel like that's the only logical thing.
And then
right?
They're just like, well, I mean, it's been 4 days. If it doesn't happen by day four, it's not going to happen.
Nobody's going to get this.
Yeah.
I mean, I went to Washington, D.C. in high school, and it happened to fall on April Fool's. And there was somebody outside the Supreme Court building protesting April Fool's Day. And I couldn't figure out if that was a joke.
I like it. I like that. You know, like it could definitely go either way.
Yeah.
You know,
the person looked, you know, like you just wouldn't be able to tell. So, yes, the neighbors saw smoke coming from the chimney, and they were like, oh, everything's all good at the Hinter Kaifek plantation. So these people.
Yeah. I mean, if there's a fire, as we say in Bavaria, if there's a fire in the hearth, ain't nobody murdered.
And then you add to that the fact that.
That should be a t-shirt.
Tyler, get out your notebook and write this down. Do it. He carries notebooks around with them, little ones.
I usually do too.
Yeah.
Actually.
And he'll write down little things.
Yeah. So, and then I usually like don't ever do anything with them.
Yeah.
96% of the notes that I take never amount to anything.
Then here's what else is weird about this. In addition to a fire coming from,
I'm going to have a great collection, like a great postmortem collection of notes.
Oh.
When somebody discover. I'm just going to start saving them all and packing them away.
Well, and you know what's funny about his is there's sometimes just a list of panic things that he has to get done in a day. Yeah. poor guy.
Speaking of what, do you have a ray of sunshine? Because I actually have something.
No,
that
it's your turn.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going on a turn.
I'm going to, okay. All right. It's turn-based ray of sunshine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got there. Don't worry about it. Take two. Lemon face, lion face. Okay, I'm back.
So in addition to the.
But I'm going to use my. I have something that Tyler might find handy that I'm going to use as my ray of sunshine. So. Anyways, continue.
Oh, will it help with, is it a pill?
We'll talk about it at the end of the show.
Okay. So guess what else had been done in the 4 days after the killings?
I'm afraid
it's
that it's going to be something that has to do with masturbation.
No, but it's odd. It's actually more bizarre. Whoever did this fed the farm animals and livestock and even went to the trouble of milking the cows. Isn't that weird?
It's like, I'm gonna murder these people in like the most gruesome, painful, horrifying way possible, but I just can't bear to see these poor cows be uncomfortable.
I mean, yeah, they also had eaten food, so they were performing daily tasks like making meals. The house
also
was...
with like a corpse of a toddler in the other room.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Just to be clear.
With this weapon that I will post a photo of. So nobody was quite worried about it until young Kazelia misses Sunday school on...
Kazelia never misses Sunday school.
Well, you know what? Okay. No.
Is this the first time you're reading this story?
No, it's not. No, it's not. Actually, I read it two other times because I'm trying to get better at that. But I read this part wrong. They weren't worried about her missing Sunday school on April 1st or the whole family skipping church because all these other things had been done. So they were like, oh, they must be sick or something like that. But then the little girl doesn't show up for school. Then the mailman notices that nobody's picked up the letters. And the neighbors start to worry about what's going on at the Hinterkaifeck farm. So consequently, three people who lived near the home visited the farm and notice that there are corpses all over the place.
It's just lousy with corpses.
It's lousy with it. And they're like, okay, this is not what we were expecting to find. So cops, you know, because they were really sharp at this point, were put together 100 suspects. It must have been the whole town.
It's kind of like, you know, like in school where it's like the teacher doesn't know who did it, who put the tax on the chair.
Yeah, everyone.
So it's like, we are going to punish all of you.
And guess what? That was the maid's first day of work at this place.
And normally, now if she had survived, she would have been like suspect number one, right?
That makes me think of the Frank Lloyd Wright one I did about, remember when the cook got fired and was all pissed off and made soup and then bashed everyone in the head with a pickaxe or something like
right.
that?
Right.
Yeah. Bludgeoned them all.
Do we know how the maid died?
By the same way.
Okay. So here's a theory. Murder suicide. And she's just like, well, I know what's really gonna fuck with people.
I'm going to bludgeon myself to death.
Yeah.
Like, but somehow that one didn't get me good enough.
But somehow I'm gonna put the mattock somewhere else and contain all my blood until it's back into the bedroom.
Yeah. Well, that's plausible.
Okay. All right. Good.
You're really good at this.
Yeah.
So here's the other weird part about this one. When I found out about this one, whenever I joke about stacking corpses to really find a case where it happened, you know, I mean, I've joked about this before and it's like, oh, wow, this really happened.
Kitty's clawing into Jody with his. It's a loving kind of clawing.
I know,
into your
and that's
life.
Why I'm just loving it. So
he is drooling all over your computer, by the way.
Oh my gosh, what's that about? Are you not
he's
giving
always,
this cat anything to drink?
Yeah,
what kind of cat drools?
I don't know, but this one does. He's got goat eyes and he drools.
I don't like goats. But anyway, so the neighbors tell police that the man in the family had reported all of these weird incidents in the months leading up to this happening. Unexplained footprints in the snow leading to the farm with none leading away, and footprints in the attic. People speculate that the killer may have been hiding in the home for a long period of time before murdering these people. And this guy also told his neighbor that his keys had gone missing. He'd found a strange newspaper in the house. He declined to borrow a gun from one of his neighbors to protect himself and the family. But here's kind of a bummer in this story. So,
oh, now we're coming to the bummer. Okay.
Yeah. So there was this rumor floating around that the dad and Victoria had an incestuous relationship. Because as you noticed, Victoria lived in the home with her two children, but there was no mention of a man living there. So apparently 7 years before the residents of the Hinterkaifeck farm were murdered, they were convicted of incest in 1915, and she went to jail for a month, and he was sent away for a whole year.
Well, that's going to solve the problem.
So then they're living together again, and the mom's just like, yeah, it's fine.
It's we're
family.
Listen, we're not gonna be able to keep them apart anyway. I mean, look at those love roots.
I mean, if you discourage it, it only will encourage them to run away together.
Yeah, that's true. Right, it's the forbidden fruit angle. Like,
so a lot of people think that the two-year-old son was the product of this relationship.
Based on what?
Well, on the relationship. I mean, there was a guy who lived down the road named Lorenz Schlittenbauer who had thought to be the father, but nobody's ever known for sure. And the skulls of the victims were sent to a clairvoyant. So the court physician took the heads off of all six of the people. He sent those to Munich to be further examined. And they were also given to clairvoyance in an effort to learn more about the perpetrator or perpetrators.
All right. I was joking before about how dumb they were in the 20s.
So then they were all buried without their heads.
Hey, clairvoyant, here's a couple of heads.
Right. Like, feel around and see if it makes you think anything.
Yeah. Does this sever head make you feel anything? Does looking at this head that used to be attached to a person, does it conjure any feeling up for you being presented with these heads?
Right.
Of,
I mean,
former people.
And there's six of them. I mean, one of them, I mean, law of averages, one of them's got a ping on something. It's like, you know, you get six, and it's like one of these.
Yeah, it's going to be something, whether it's related to the case or not, you know, like.
So guess what happened? So
it's like,
people,
ooh, this guy
had a big dick.
You could just tell.
So the heads, people were buried without their heads as a result. Guess what? World War II happens and they lose the heads and they've never found them. Like the, so, you know, there's.
I love to think that there's somebody out there that has just murder victim heads in their inventory.
It's very possible.
Yeah.
Somebody's like, these are the heads of some dead Germans my grandpa got. And it's like, well, he wouldn't be wrong, but grandpa's probably said, like, he killed them or something. It's like, well, these ones were already dead from a murder.
And also, murder. One of them was two and one of them was seven, but...
Oh, you'd be able to tell that. That's right. Yeah. Well, what? German kids aren't any better. I mean, if they were Nazi ones.
Well, they're just... Right, exactly. They're raising them to be Nazis.
You gotta cut it.
You
cut
gotta
a,
take them...
Come at the quick.
Take them out when they're young. Cut it off at the source.
Yeah. So the property gets...
We are not advocating for killing children,
no,
by the
way. We're not. So in 1923, just a year after the murder, they raise the Hinterkaifeck farm and they replace it with a memorial. So then there's also a cemetery in the Weidhofen Cemetery. There's a memorial to these people as well. Then 1999 comes along and an elderly woman contacts the authorities and says that her former landlord admitted to having information about the killings So this landlord made the claim in 1935. It was too late because the potential suspect was no longer alive in 1999. So students at the German Police Academy used modern techniques to investigate the unsolved case. They ruled out all but one suspect. However, the suspected killer is dead, so they didn't publicly name the person they think is responsible. So we have no way of knowing if this landlord of this woman is the same person that these students ruled out. If you rule out all but one suspect, I mean, that's pretty much...
Well, I know what happens when you're playing Clue. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Or the Baker Street game.
221B.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I still haven't played it yet, but I assume that's what happens.
No.
Not. You rule out everybody, you do your DNA testing, and you rule out everybody but one.
You get a little adorable kit that you could do a DNA testing on stuff.
Yeah.
You look like you believed it for half a second. So anyway, that's the Hinterkaifeck murders. Still unsolved, probably solved, but we'll never know. Yeah. The shadow never knows, or always knows.
Yeah, but you know, the shadow's kind of a dick and doesn't tell the rest of us.
I know. Well, just like these students, what a bunch of assholes.
Yeah, you know. Speaking of murdered people, Edmund Zagorski in 1984 was sentenced for killing two men during a drug deal.
Okay. Edmund Gazorski.
Zagorski. He was apparently met with John Dotson and Jimmy Porter to buy a bunch of weed. Mm. And he shot them and then cut their throats. Which seems like overkill.
Whoa.
Like, you know, like...
Which part came first?
I think the shooting. Wow. But I didn't dig that deep because I was just like, yeah, this guy was like getting after these guys. Like, you know, so I don't know if there was like some, you know, a rift between these guys, or it sounded like it was just a robbery. You know, like he was going there to buy stuff, decided to shoot him, and was going to just rob him, you know. And but he was, they caught him, they arrested him. He was sentenced in 1984 to death.
Is this what the Child's Play movie is based on?
Yeah. Yeah, Chucky. Yeah, Chucky, Edmund Chucky Zagorski. So the appeals process went on. I mean, you know, like when you're put on death row, like, you know, the inmates are not, you know, they're entitled to, you know, like a mm-hmm. process of appeals and all that kind of stuff. And, so this lingered on for quite some time. And actually,
what do you appeal? Like, did he confess to it?
I don't know. I don't know if he did. Because, honestly, this story is not about him.
Oh, okay. I won't worry about it.
Yeah. So, his execution was scheduled for October 11th, so just a couple of weeks ago.
From the 80s.
Right. Yes. So, you know, so this has been going on for some time. And, the execution had been halted because his lawyers, like he'd been scheduled for lethal injection, but his lawyers wanted, they were arguing that lethal injection is like a terribly inhumane way to execute someone. And in fact, they referred to it as unspeakable torture.
Is that true?
We'll get to that.
Okay.
So the state of Tennessee, I believe this is where this is happening. Yep, Tennessee. State of Tennessee gave him the choice to either die by lethal injection or by the electric chair. And so his lawyers appealed again and said it was unconstitutional to force an inmate to choose their method of execution. But ultimately, he chose the chair. So
that feels worse, but okay.
The chair that they use in Tennessee was designed and built by a guy named
Benjamin Franklin.
Fred Benjamin Franklin Lucher.
Okay. Yeah. So
Fred Lucher.
I know all about this story.
Do you?
No, but I've clearly, because I knew the Chucky thing.
Oh, right. Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, sorry to steal this one from you.
That's okay.
So Fred Lucher designed and built this chair, and he, when Zagorski chose it as his method of execution, Lucher made a public statement because he's no longer working with the Tennessee prison system, and he said that he was worried about the use of this chair because he hadn't had a chance to service it, and it had been like, you know, updated and whatever, you know, with parts and things that he didn't approve of. So he had
some integrity about his electric chair.
Yeah, right, exactly. It's got his name on it, and he didn't want it used, you know, because he didn't have a chance. He hadn't been servicing the thing. So Fred Lucher was born on February 7th, 1943. He received a Bachelor of Arts in History from Boston University in 1964. I almost said 18.
I know you did. Yeah. Yeah, classic Bachelor of Arts in the 1860s.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. I mean, and really, if you were studying history in the 1860s, like, you were studying what happened last Thursday?
You were busy making history.
Yeah, that's right. Making history and making babies. That's what they did in the 1800s. So Lucher started a company called Fred Lucher Associates. That, like, he was real interested in capital punishment and making. he was an enthusiast, you know, like, and he wanted to make, improve and document and ascertain the effectiveness of the equipment that states were using to administer capital punishment.
And I can appreciate that.
His first work was with electric chairs, which he actually started in Tennessee, and he claimed that his work was all about it was humanitarian. He wanted to provide greater respect for guards and the people being executed, and he also claimed that that he offered his services at a pretty considerable, you know, like a really good rate. Just he bought off the shelf parts, so nothing fancy. His labor and a 20% profit, and that was it. But word began to spread, and his reputation followed him from Tennessee to other states, and. Further assignment, right? Exactly, and it allowed him to, quote, aggressively solicit business. And in 1985, the state of New Jersey purchased Lucher's proposal for the first lethal injection system for $30,000. In a story published on October 24th, 1990, the New York Times described him as a, quote, self-proclaimed execution expert and manufacturer of death machinery. It quoted Edward A. Bruner, chairman of the anesthesia department of Northwestern University Medical School, as saying Lucher's lethal injection system would indeed paralyze a condemned criminal with Pavulon. But far from being humane, this paralysis would merely stop the prisoner from screaming at the, quote, extreme pain in the form of a severe burning sensation caused by potassium chloride injection. And potassium chloride is still commonly used in lethal injection. So, you know, that's probably not such a bad way to go, right? Being tortured to death and you can't do anything about it.
You know how many people think that's fine, though?
Yeah, well, right, exactly. Now, and I understand, like, the desire for retribution. Like, I understand that feeling. But what about, like, the person who is innocent? You know, like is it okay to punish people who did terrible things,
mm-hmm.
even if a few not
slip through the cracks?
Yeah, you know, and my argument would be no.
Yeah.
That's my stance on it is, and, you know, looking at the history of, and not to get into like a whole political thing about this, but like looking at the history of capital punishment, like, you know, it's been around for a long time. If it worked as a deterrent, like, you know, we'd probably be crime free by now.
No kidding. And like people will see like the, you know, things will happen, things that aren't even terribly that serious. And people are like, you know, give him the chair and right. all this. That's like, yeah. Jesus, it's right. this weird base response. Like yeah. just kill. Like, wow, have you really thought about what that means right. to do that?
And maybe like, you know, like take an empathetic approach. Like, what if it's you?
Right.
You know, like, you know, what if somebody accused you of something and there was, you know, like circumstantial evidence that, you know, and they're like, well, yeah, good enough. Yeah. Give him the chair.
Yeah.
Like, or her.
Yeah.
But I mean, let's be honest.
Right.
So in 1988, there was a guy by the name of Ernst Zundel who was he was on trial in Canada for publishing a bunch of Holocaust denial stuff. And he was looking for like expert witnesses. And Zundel knew a guy by the name of Bill Armantrout, who was a warden for the Missouri State Penitentiary in Jefferson City.
Okay.
And Armantrout knew he was responsible for he had a gas chamber at that prison. And
oh my God.
And Lucher had worked, like he had set up the gas chamber. And so when Zundel was looking for expert witness, Armantrout was like, hey, I know a guy. Like, you should talk to this guy. And so Lucher was hired to come in as an expert witness in this trial.
Mm-hmm.
So what he did was traveled to Auschwitz and studied the structures that were identified by guards, prisoners, and investigators as gas chambers, and concluded that they could not have been used for mass murder. This is why we need video. Just your reaction to that.
I mean,
it was his findings were published in what is kind of a famous report among Holocaust denial, mm-hmm. which is called the Lucher Report. It's called, the full title is The Lucher Report, an Engineering Report on the Alleged Execution Chambers at Auschwitz, Birkenau, and Majdanek, Poland. The first forensic examination of Auschwitz.
catchy title.
Yeah. Yes, right. Gets right to the point.
Mm-hmm.
So prior to releasing the port, Lucha had traveled to several sites that had been identified as gas chambers, where he went through with a camera crew who watched him going through beating on walls, ceilings, and floors with a chisel and hammer, chipping and scraping off pieces of the masonry. Some of these places he didn't exactly have permission to go, but, you know, whatever. This is for the greater good, right?
Mm-hmm.
And actually, Lucha had gotten married about a month before taking this trip, and he told his wife that this trip was their honeymoon. Which, I mean, if you're marrying this guy, I guess maybe you kind of know what comes with the territory. But
but this is like on a whole different level of objectionable beliefs, right? I mean, other stuff is bad enough,
right? Just the fact that he's involved with capital punishment,
And then like trying to say that it's humane, but then none of the things he's really done sound like they're that great of strides for improvement. I mean, like the injection system just paralyzes people. Like, right. That's a better thing, I guess. So you don't have to be reminded with screams.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So you marry somebody and then they're like, oh yeah, now we're going to do this Holocaust denial stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he brings back all these samples to a lab in Boston, and he told the lab that these were only going to be used in a court case about an industrial accident.
Mm.
So
what were they testing for?
They were testing for exposure to cyanide.
Okay. In like the DNA of 6 million people.
Right. Yeah. So the lab manager actually testified under oath to the results at the trial. But he didn't actually know what he was testifying about until after he was off the stand. And afterwards...
Oh, no.
Afterwards he said that the cyanide would have formed an extremely fine layer on the walls. As he describes it, to the depth of 1/10 of a human hair. And Lucha had taken samples of indeterminate thickness. And because he hadn't been informed of what they were actually testing, the lab manager actually had pulverized the entire samples, you know, and was taking samples from the material, which would have diluted any cyanide that was on the surface. And he said it would be like analyzing paint on a wall by analyzing the timber that's behind it. You know?
Yeah.
So Lucha basically says, like, well, see, there's no cyanide. You know, like, I mean, there's no cyanide behind, you know, like, you know, behind the bricks. You know, like inside the bricks.
Oh my.
And also, you know, this is 50 years after, you know,
right
after it happened. And, you know, a lot of the cyanide that would have been on the bricks would have broken down.
Mm-hmm.
And there were tests that were actually done immediately after World War II that showed substantial amounts of cyanide. So it just totally ignores all of that. And the fact that a lot of these sites were, you know, when the Nazis realized that they were done, they tried to destroy a lot of this stuff. So a lot of the stuff that actually is standing now is reconstruction. You know, they were rebuilt.
Yeah.
You know, to preserve.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, if he's going through with a hammer and a chisel, like, how does he know which bricks were there and which ones weren't?
No kidding. You know?
So,
oh my God, this guy's the worst.
So people started protesting outside the courthouse and actually outside Lucher's home in Massachusetts. And but despite all of the bad press, he remained active in the capital punishment community until 1990.
Wow.
And people started digging into his background a little bit. In the late 80s, he had been featured in both the Atlantic Monthly and Primetime Live, as a guest on the show. And actually, I found there's an old Donahue episode on YouTube talking about capital punishment that Lucher's on.
I watched
a part of that. And if there was ever a movie about this guy, well, there is a documentary, which we'll get to. But if there was ever, like, if somebody was going to play him in a movie, like, it would totally be Rick Moranis. You know, just to kind of paint a picture. So he stopped getting a lot of, people started kind of freezing him out of the capital punishment game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he stopped getting bids and things like that. And so he began lecturing to Holocaust denial groups, such as the Institute for Historical Review. And, really, he just kept insisting that, you know, his...
He was going with the cyanide thing.
Yeah. It was just like, hey, I did the research. I was there, you know? And he was quoted from a speech at the 11th Institute for Historical Review Conference in 1992.
I hate that name, by the way, the Institute for Historical Review.
Hey, we're just asking questions here. We're just asking questions. What's the problem with that?
We're reviewing history.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, it really almost should be the Institute for Historical Revision, but, but he was basically... Well, I'll let his quote speak for itself. And, you know, keeping in mind who this is coming from. In this case, it is myself that I, post-mortem, and the cadaver isn't dead yet. Much to the dismay of my executions, the execution was so badly botched that I am able to stand here before you to speak the truth and to tell the world that it is not myself, but the Holocaust story that is dead. I will repeat for the record. I was condemned for maintaining that there were no execution gas chambers at Auschwitz. There's no proof for this charge, only innuendos, lies, and half-truths. Robert Forreson, Ernest Zundel, and others said it first. They, too, live as victims of botched executions, but nevertheless free to speak the truth in a strong and growing voice that repeats, no gas chambers, no gas chambers, no damn gas chambers. So when he tried to sell parts of a lethal injection machine and some other stuff from Fred Lucher Associates, he started trying to collect on some of the states who he had previously signed contracts with.
Mm-hmm.
They started really doing a little digging on this guy, and they found out that although he had been claiming in official state documents to have been an engineer, he never had any formal engineering experience or education, and he didn't have a license to practice as an engineer, which is something that the state of Massachusetts requires, as do a lot of other states. You know, like if you're, yeah, like, you know.
It blows my mind how often people get away with like this resume shit for so long and get to rise to such ranks before, you know, they're like, wait a minute, we better look into this. It's usually when things go south and they start thinking.
Yeah, right. It's like, wait a second, who is this guy?
Yeah.
Who did we actually hire here?
Yeah.
So his wife divorced him. He was actually in England, and he was arrested in England and deported from the UK. And things really started falling apart for him. Lucher claimed that the U.S. consulate personnel refused him aid, and that he had been interrupted while giving a speech at giving an invited speech at David Irving's instigation. His talk was immediately followed by Robert Forreston, who is, I mentioned before, he's a famous Holocaust denier.
Mm-hmm.
So he says that that all of this criticism was the work of an international cabal, and that he was unjustly attacked and had his rights violated. So as things fell apart with him, he eventually ended up going to work for the Institution of Historical Review as a telephone solicitor.
Oh, how far the mighty has fallen.
In 1990, Newsweek reported that Alabama Assistant Attorney General Ed Carnes called Lucher's views on the gas chamber, quote, unorthodox, and alleged that Lucher was running a death row shakedown scheme. If a state didn't purchase Lucher's services, he would testify at the last minute for the condemned man that the state's death chamber might malfunction.
Is there any truth to this?
Now, Carnes was claiming that Lucher was making, quote, money on both sides of the fence. And in his memo to death penalty states, Carnes mentions that Florida and Virginia and the federal courts had rejected Lucher's testimony as unreliable. In Virginia, Lucher provided a death row inmate's attorney with an affidavit claiming, take two, claiming the electric chair would fail. The Virginia court decided the credibility of Lucher's affidavit was limited because Lucher was, quote, the refused contractor who bid to replace the electrodes in the Virginia chair. So, in 1991 is when he was brought up on actual charges of practicing engineering without a license by the Board of Registration of Professional Engineers and of Land Surveyors. Which is a kind of another mouthful.
Yeah, it is. And land surveyors, they were like, put us in there.
So Lucher signed a consent to decree with the board in which he stated that he was not and had never been registered as a professional engineer despite having represented himself as one. And he settled with prosecutors by serving 2 years of probation and agreeing to stop disseminating documents in which he presented himself as an engineer, including the Lucher Report.
Whoa, that's big.
Yeah. So, there is a documentary about this guy. It's called Mr. Death, The Rise and Fall of Fred A. Lucher Jr. It's put out in 1999. And you know, really kind of goes through this whole story. I haven't seen it yet, but I am told by the internet that it's quite good.
Wow. I mean, this is a fascinating tale.
Yeah. And all from like a headline that I happen to read, you know, that this about the guy
requesting the chair.
Yeah. The guy. The... Well, right. Yeah. The guy, So the guy, yeah, I guess I should, that's what I should really finish up with. So the guy requested the chair.
Yes, that's why I need to know. I need to know.
The guy requested the chair. Lucher says, it's not going to work. You're just going to torture this guy. He talks about, in an interview with him recently, he talks about a couple of electric chair executions in other places where, you know, like the executees had like their heads lit on fire, and you know, like there's some real horror, like electric chair horror stories out there. You know what? I don't have the date, but it was just the other day at 7:26 p.m. I was on Thursday. What day was Thursday?
Yesterday.
That was November 1st. So November 1st, I'll clean all this up in post.
No, you won't.
November 1st, 2018, Edmund Zagorski was executed at 7:26 p.m. And according to this, his last words were, "Let's rock."
And how did it go?
Apparently it went... It just,
without a hitch.
Yeah, without a hitch. You know, I mean, without any other, like, hitch than you would expect, like, electrocuting a person to death.
So what that guy had feared about the stuff didn't come to fruition, about, oh, it's not going to work right and all that stuff.
Right. Yeah, and I don't know if like, his... if Lucher's goal was, I don't know if he's just trying to get back into the headlines. I don't know if he's, you know, if he was genuinely concerned about Zagorski's well-being while being killed by the state. You know, I don't really know what his motivations were to reach out and put himself back in the headlines, but...
Yeah, I have a feeling this guy had very little concern about the well-being of these people, right?
What? Based on what?
There was no cyanide.
Yeah, yeah. Couldn't have happened.
Mm. Right.
Which, you know, of course, like, Holocaust deniers have really latched onto. That's a big thing that they've really... latched onto as far as, you know, proof that it couldn't have happened. So.
I mean, I'm taking a picture of your kid.
Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah. Don't let me interrupt. I'm sorry. So your ray of sunshine today.
Yeah.
I found.
Get this down here.
I found this, this thing because I've been trying to find a good way to organize my notes,
you know,
for all sorts of things. So I've got a couple of writing projects that I'm working on. This, you know, tell me something weird. I've got some other things happening that I really need to keep organized. And I was actually, this is something that I found in that book that I had used as a ray of sunshine at our last live show, which is An Anarchist Guide to Travel.
Yes.
He had recommended this program called Evernote.
Oh, okay.
And now there's a free version of it, which I haven't used, but I opted for one of the paid plans, which is like $8 a month.
Because you're a baller.
Yeah, because I'm a, you know, like that's just, I roll deep. And, but I really like it. It's like,
but see, you can, don't write with paper then.
Well, I do, and then I just like I'll transfer my notes into Evernote, my handwritten notes into, and that's actually a cool thing is you can just snap a picture of your notes and put it into your notebook in Evernote.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So, I'm a huge fan of it so far. I've only been using it for, you know, like, I don't know, 2 weeks maybe,
mm-hmm.
but. It actually made it super easy to put this episode together. Like,
wow.
I probably put this episode together. You know, it normally takes several hours. I bet you I did this in 45 minutes.
All thanks to Evernote.
Yeah. So, Evernote. $8 a month buys back so much time.
Your invoice is in the mail.
Yeah. You know what? I should reach out to them.
I was just thinking that. Because you could.
If they just give me Evernote. We'll negotiate Evernote.
Yeah, yeah. I like where you're going with it.
Yeah, but I love it. I think, you know, if you have a lot of stuff that you need to keep track of, and I'm the kind of guy I have struggled with organization my whole life. You know, like, and
this feels like an ad.
Have you struggled with organization your whole life? Do you need a solution? Are you rifling through your notebooks looking for one thing and you're frustrated, hands in the air? There's got to be a better way. Fortunately, now there is.
Evernote. Can you search words?
Wouldn't that be cool? Yeah, I believe you can. Yes. It's like there's a thing right at the top. Search all notes. Here, let me just write a just gonna do it. This is live on the air. This is happening right now.
Oh my! Let's see if it's gonna pull something up.
Yep. I just searched for the last name Lucher, and it pulled up all of my notes that had Fred Lucher's name in it.
Wow.
So, you can create shortcuts. You can create like different notebooks for different projects. I mean, there's a Google Chrome extension where you can cut whole articles, you can cut just sections of text. It's crazy awesome. I'm realizing now that I'm running out of actual words to say, but the emotions are just pouring out of me. So check it out. Ray of Sunshine, Evernote. You can't even go to tmsw.show/Amazon to buy that one. But if you want to support the show, you can go to tmsw.show/Amazon and buy all of the things that you would normally buy anyway.
And while you're doing that, why don't you sip on a nice, crisp Montucky cold snack, the official beer sponsor of Tell Me Something Weird.
And I had one just recently. I hadn't been drinking for like 6 months, and I had a Montucky cold snack.
And it was like...
It was exactly what I remembered.
Hey, live show coming up on November 19th, 7:30 p.m.
BJ Hollers.
Yep.
The legend, the myth, the actual human being.
I am proofreading his Wisconsin Strange book right now. He talks all about the kinds of stuff that you would love to talk about on the show.
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
And before we sit down with him, I'm going to read his book, From the Mouth of Dogs.
Oh, he wrote a book called that?
Yeah.
Oh. He's written so many books.
He's written so many books. You guys are just going to love him. You're going to love him. So come out to the show, November 19th. I think he's just an absolute delight.
Have a weird week.